Sir John Soane's Museum, which is at 13 Lincoln's Inn Fields in the City of London, is one of the most charming, interesting, intriguing, beguiling, and fun museums I think I've ever been in. It's been a public museum since the early 19th century. It's built from three houses on the north side of Lincoln's Inn Fields, and these are Georgian-style houses. And I'm talking to William Palin. William, thank you very much for taking the time to be with us today.
Pleasure, Bob.
The first time I came to this museum about 3 years ago, something just totally resonated with me here. And when I went home and I wrote about it and thought about it, I thought the reason it resonated was because I felt the presence of the man himself, Sir John Soane, constantly, as if he were standing next to me everywhere I went in this place. So I would like you to start by just telling our listeners, who was Sir John Soane?
Okay, Sir John Soane, well, the most important thing to understand, first of all, that he was an architect, one of our most important architects. And I think by the time he finished building this museum and forming its collection in the early 19th century, he was considered to be the sort of grand old man of British architecture. He'd had a long, successful career. And as well as this museum, he'd also built the Bank of England, one of the most important buildings of the time in the City of London, and a whole number of other public and private commissions around England. Soane was an interesting personality. His background is curious. He was actually the youngest son of a bricklayer from a small town in the Thames Valley near a place called Reading. And we know that he went to school till he was about 13. He then had a very lucky break. He was working for his brother on the building site, and he was spotted by a visiting architect from London, taken on as an apprentice. And from that point on, he never looked back. He enrolled at the Royal Academy. When he came to London, was a star student, won a gold medal, won a scholarship to go on the Grand Tour, came back to England in 1780 and set up a small office and began to travel around working very hard. Then it all happened for him. He made, first of all, he made a good marriage. He married an heiress in 1784, and she brought with her a large fortune that came from a rich uncle who was a property developer in London, interestingly. Also, by the time this inheritance had come through, Soane, to be fair, had been appointed as architect of the Bank of England, a very important position, and he was to remain as architect for 45 years, finally retiring in 1833. So I think the starting point when we look at the museum is 1790. The inheritance has come through. Soane is a successful architect, and it's then that he decides to build a house suitable for someone of his new status.
Now, just before we get to that, can I ask, was he also essentially an autodidact?
Well, yes. You know, he left school at the age of 13. He studied at the Royal Academy. And he had various very important role models. His first master was someone called George Dance, who was an incredibly important, influential architect at the time, who built Newgate Jail in the City of London and was one of a new breed of architects who was sort of breaking the rules and experimenting with new ideas and became very influential on Soane. But from that point on, he really taught himself architectural theory, and he read very widely. And he was very interested in architectural education.
He was a professor of architecture as well, was he not?
Indeed, he became professor of architecture in 1806 at the Royal Academy. And indeed, the museum and the way the collection developed was partly his response to his responsibilities as professor of architecture, because he set up the displays here for the benefit of his students, who could come here and look at casts and fragments and, I suppose, have a sort of grand tour in miniature.
So he really didn't just do what we are about to describe for himself. There certainly was a fair amount of generosity involved in allowing access to all his treasures.
Absolutely. I mean, the motives behind the evolution of this museum are very complex. But one very important one is certainly this idea of creating an academy of architecture. and he collected objects, not just, you know, your architectural bits, but books and 30,000 architectural drawings specifically for the benefit of future generations of artists, sculptors and architects. And that was written into the Act of Parliament that preserved the museum on his death.
Now, that was 1833, I believe, was it?
The Act was passed in 1833. Soane died in his 84th year in 1837, and just 2 days after his death, the first official visitors were admitted to Sir John Soane's museum.
And just to briefly again explain why that Act of Parliament was so important.
Well, Soane had two sons, John and George. The elder son, John, on whom Soane had pinned his hopes of sort of creating a dynasty of architects, died young. He suffered from tuberculosis. The younger son, George, was a very different character. He rebelled against his father completely. They didn't get on at all. George got into financial trouble. Soane helped him out for a bit and then got frustrated with him. George eventually went to prison for debt. And then after being released, he wrote two articles attacking the work of his own father. And from that point on, I'm afraid father and son were never to be reconciled. Now, because of this, Soane in his later years began to worry about what would happen to his collection after his death. He certainly didn't want George getting his hands on it. He would have just sold it up. So it was then that he formed this idea of preserving it and leaving it to the nation as a public museum.
The unfortunate phenomenon in contemporary terms of what we call in North America, anyway, the postponed generation, those that never quite grow up. I want to talk to you about the character, the personal values, and the period of time in which Sir John Soane lived. But first, I have in front of me a pamphlet called A Portrait of Soane, A Trail for Museums and Galleries. And during the month of May, the Soane Museum is celebrating Museums and Galleries Month, an annual event sponsored by the Campaign for Museums, I'm reading, to promote and raise awareness of museums and art galleries all over Great Britain. This year's theme is People, Who Are We? And of course, that's why I'm here, because I really want to know who this man is. And I like the quote here from the poet Samuel Taylor Coleridge, which says, "This is emphatically the age of the personality." Can you expand more on the personality of John Soane?
Okay, the personality of John Soane. Well, it's sometimes very difficult to really gauge Soane's personality because he's left one version of himself in the museum. You know, the museum is very much an autobiography of Soane, but that's how he wanted you to perceive him. In reality, Soane was a complex, often difficult character, and was acknowledged by his close friends to have a nervous disorder, as they put it, which was some form of depression or some other kind of psychological problem. And I don't want to overplay this, but it does really play a part in the way that Soane behaved in creating this amazing house and collection. He suffered perhaps a persecution complex. He felt disappointment that his two sons hadn't followed him into architecture. He pioneered a brand of architecture which was outlandish, difficult to understand, and this led to ridicule such as those articles published by his son, and also a general sense that Soane was sort of pushing the boundaries too far and people couldn't understand his style or found it inappropriate sometimes. But to get back to your point, we have to look at this in the context of the time. This was the age of the personality and this was the Romantic period. And part of the Romantic psyche was the sense that you were a misunderstood genius. Think of the poets of the age, think of Byron and Shelley. And this was an important part of the self-image of a creative person. They somehow were lonely torchbearers in the wilderness, misunderstood and persecuted. And it would only be future generations that would discover their genius. And actually, in Soane's case, and that's exactly what's happened.
And I was going to say, to me, when I look at this museum and wander through, I see almost an obsessional part or nature to his character. And it was this the character of the age as well, that suddenly doors had opened wide and people could think far beyond themselves, but that also meant they had to think deep within themselves.
I think so. I think that the way to really understand the Romantic period, I suppose, in respect to Soane, is this idea of emotion being allowed to play a part in disciplines that were previously seen to be rational and you know, prior to Soane, architecture, you know, basically was a job. You did what the client wanted. You had the right designs. You were fashionable. But what Soane brought into his architecture and what Turner brought into his art was a sense of emotion, vulnerability, sublime effects. And suddenly, personality and personal emotions found themselves within architecture.
And that could be judged as eccentric.
Absolutely, eccentric, willful, however you want to put it. But, it's an incredibly important part of understanding this period.
Marshall McLuhan, the Canadian media guru, who said that the message is in the medium. And I'm wondering if this museum is both medium and message, whether he has, this is almost a rhetorical question, I guess, but he seems to have created both at the same time. There is no disconnect between the building and the collection.
Yeah, I think that's a crucial part of what makes this museum so unique, is that Soane, as an architect and a collector, built the museum around the collection and formed the collection within the museum, so the two things are very much intertwined. And you can see as you walk around that Soane employs architectural effects often for specific objects or to reflect and shed light on specific works of art. So there is this extraordinary sense of the museum being a sort of total organism.
And some people, I think, when they first wander through this museum, and it may look very jumbled, but of course it's not. There's an incredible sense of organization, an incredible sense of order here. There's also an incredible sense of passion, but it's an understated passion. You have to look a little further beyond. The passion of the collector. Sometimes I wonder if this is actually a neurological condition. How does he, John Soane, represent the collector?
Well, I mean, Soane is absolutely, if you want the sort of, whatever you call it, the psychological archetype of the collector, Soane is that person. And the motives behind his collecting are sort of manifold. There is this sense of bringing things together to make a point he wants to make about architecture, about art in the broader sense. There is the idea of wanting to possess beautiful, important things. And we look at his library and many volumes that he would have hardly have looked at, but are high-status, prestige objects, such as the three first folio editions of Shakespeare that we have. And then, of course, works by Reynolds, Turner, other great artists of the time. The other, I think, interesting part of Soane as a collector is the sense of wanting to control things. And we look at his two sons and we look at that sort of frustration he suffers, perhaps naively expecting to be able to control their destiny and control what they wanted to do. Wasn't able to do that, but with inanimate objects in the collection you can.
And that is obsessional or controlling behavior.
Absolutely, and I don't think anyone would argue that Soane definitely fits in that category. But certainly the museum and the way that he collected things and the way that he displayed them was following a very deliberate and rigorous intellectual program, which ties in all the things that we've spoken about.
Okay, let's talk about the collections in this amazing museum. First of all, just the issue of provenance. Could you explain that, especially as it applies to this museum?
Of course, provenance is terribly important to a collector, as we all know. And Soane was very, very interested in objects that have belonged to great people, for example. So we have
Provenance means where did it come from and how did it come to be here?
Absolutely, yes. And we're not just talking about who owned them, but of course how they got there. The journey that this object has taken over time before it sort of rested in the sweaty palms of the eager collector.
And excuse me for interrupting, but and that's why this is a travel story.
I see now what you're getting at. But of course, I mean, you said it, the journey of an object prior to its arrival is terribly important. The object embodies a story.
Well, let's start with the antiquities. The sarcophagus of Seti I.
Sure. One of the great works of Egyptian art on display anywhere in the world, and a real coup for the collector John Soane. The story is quite fun. The sarcophagus was discovered in Egypt on a British-led expedition by an Italian archaeologist called Giovanni Bellazzoni, who was a great character. He first came to England in the beginning of the 19th century as a circus performer. He had a strongman act and performed not far from the museum at Lincoln's Inn Theatre. Anyway, to tell you what happened, he became interested in archaeology, went out, discovered this amazing object. It was brought over to England, during which time Bellazzoni died, and his wife offered it to the British Museum for £2,000, along with some other items. And it sat in the British Museum on display for 2 or 3 years while the trustees sort of unnerved and tried to make up their minds whether it was worth the asking price. In the end, they deliberated too long. John Soane stepped in. £2,000 went down on the table. And
good for him.
And the sarcophagus was his. And it was he was terribly excited by this. It was his most expensive acquisition, and he held a party on 3 days to celebrate and lit the museum with thousands of candles and oil lamps and invited all the great and the good from London society to come and see this amazing object.
Beautifully placed, too, in the alcove, and one initially looks down upon it, and I know I'm being rather romantic here, too, but when I look down on it, I hear my name is Ozymandias, King of Kings.
That's right. You can use Shelley all over the museum in that respect. You know, Soane designed his basement as a burial crypt, really, and this was the icing on the cake to have this object placed at the bottom of that amazing dome area, which is the sort of spiritual heart of the museum. And there's no surprise that on the balustrade you'll find a bust of Soane himself as Julius Caesar, and either side of him two less important, smaller figurines of Michelangelo and Raphael.
Intellectually, it's a lot of fun. Medieval antiquities, but I want to talk about the Renaissance antiquities, the bronze statuette of Mercury.
Yeah, I mean, we have some beautiful Renaissance objects here as well. Never fall into the trap of thinking it's just a museum of antiquity. Renaissance art was very important to Soane. You know, the link between Renaissance art and antiquity was important. The beautiful bronze statuette of Victory, that sits on our staircase in the wonderful little alcove lit from above by a hidden lantern which sheds, I think it's red light on this object, but there's also yellow glass as well. And he sort of leaps out on you as you come up the staircase. It's great fun.
Neoclassical sculpture, a collection of models by John Flaxman. And in talking about this, can you talk about the thriving trade in casts and Flaxman himself?
Okay, casts. Well, casts were terribly important in understanding classical art, because obviously you could get full-size versions of the most important classical buildings or elements of classical decoration. They were used from the late 18th century onwards in art schools and by architects and artists. And many of Soane's casts come from other collections, which were amassed by architects and artists in England.
So sort of one step removed from the real object or the source.
Absolutely. I mean, they were very important for the two reasons. One was appreciating scale, and the other one was to teach students how to draw and shade and understand relief and depth of relief in real classical decoration. And, of course, for a long period, while Soane was creating his museum, they couldn't travel in Europe because of the Napoleonic Wars. So, you know, this was why these little touchstones of classical design, these casts, were so important.
Somewhat like artistic anatomy lessons.
Yeah, exactly.
Oriental objects, Chinese tiles, the most notable collection of Chinese tiles in Europe.
Yes, I was hoping you wouldn't ask me that question because I don't know much about them. But again,
well, they're beautiful.
Yeah, I mean, it reflects the diversity of Soane's collecting and this idea that he wanted to get an example of a piece of great art from every culture, and the way the cultures are all mixed up in the museum is terribly important, because in a regular museum display, things are chronologically displayed according to type and culture, and they're all in one place. In the same museum, he draws your attention to comparisons and contrast between works of art from different cultures and different periods, so you get a different sort of, and perhaps slightly more stimulating experience.
And even though this is a museum today, it is and was his home, full of fine furniture, for example, a rare survival of ordinary domestic furniture in the early 19th century. Why is that important in this museum?
Well, I mean, you said at the beginning, you walk in, you feel Soane's presence. This is hugely enhanced by the fact that this is still has the trappings and the feel of a domestic house. And indeed, when Soane left the museum to the nation, he said that nothing should be changed, nothing should be added or taken away. So even the domestic bits and pieces are here. So you get this wonderful sort of mixture of great design from the period with other works of art from different periods, from antiquity to the Renaissance. And it's interesting to think of the museum actually at the time was a sort of design museum for modern design and modern art. You could come here and look at the work of living British artists and sculptors. You could see the best examples of neoclassical furniture, much of which was designed by Soane himself. So this represented the cutting edge of design at the time, and ironically still does, because architects, North American architects included, like Richard Meyer and Philip Johnson, came here and took much inspiration from our collection.
In a very human environment in that respect.
Because of the domestic quality, it has an intimacy, and people can feel that they're not alienated or distanced from the objects as perhaps they feel in a more conventional museum, and therefore the experience can be more intense.
And before we finish, we better first of all mention the website for people to look at. What is the website?
The website address is www.soane, that's S for sugar, O-N for Nicholas E, I always have to get that right, .org.
And where approximately are we located?
We're in sort of the central part of London called Holborn. It's very close to the British Museum, so there's lots of hotels and areas here, and it's a very handy location if you want to get to Covent Garden, you want to get to the river, and yet the amazing garden square we're on here is very tranquil. It's a little oasis, and it's a wonderful place to come and sit in the summer and eat sandwiches in the park, and of course hopefully come to the museum after that.
William, thank you very much for this.
Pleasure.